This is the Paul Revere Show. This is attorney Craig Mastantuono sitting in tonight for regular host Mark Thompson and talking about the events of the day. It occurs to me that it is September 12th, which means we are just under 2 months outside of the election cycle. Let me just let all of our listeners know that we're coming at you from 92.7 FM and WTTN 1580 AM in Madison, and the Shaw 101 FM and Waukesha 540 AM in Waukesha for the Paul Revere Hour. And we have a lot to talk about tonight, so I want to introduce and start the discussion with our guest this evening, Wisconsin State Representative Christine Sinicki from the 20th District. 20th, right, Christine?
Yes, the 20th.
Which is Bayview-Cudahy, as I recall. So maybe you can correct me a little bit on those boundary lines. I know everything changed this year, but I'm looking forward to a great discussion with you on kind of the Democratic Legislative Caucus perspective on the upcoming election cycle for statewide and legislative races.
Okay. So, Craig, actually, my district is Bayview, the southeast part of the city of Milwaukee, St. Francis, Cudahy, airport area. And I actually even go out to like 35th Street in some areas. So during redistricting, it didn't change much. It's pretty much, I think I got two new wards and that was it. So I got a little lucky in redistricting. Unfortunately, some of my colleagues weren't as lucky as I was. So
I'm aware of that. You know, it occurs to me that we don't talk often enough with people like yourself. If you could spend a minute just telling our listeners, what's that like? I mean, you've got a lot of ground that you just went through. And I know you do a lot of doors and continue to do doors. What are the various groups in your district and what do you look out for and have on your radar in terms of your constituent needs?
Well, you know, I've always been really fortunate. I have a very progressive district. There are some pockets of some conservatives, but for the most part, it's a strong Democratic district. Being right along the lakefront, there's always issues, you know, around the environment, climate change, of course. I have a lot of people that who are very active in environmental issues. The other things that are really popping up, obviously, during this election are, of course, Roe. That is a huge issue in my district. And gerrymandering. it never fails. Anybody I talk to brings up gerrymandering because everybody in the state knows that it's going to be very difficult to win back seats the way these districts are drawn. But yeah, so those are really the top issues. I don't get a whole lot of people asking, you know, wanting to talk about the economy. We're very social issue minded down here.
All right. Well, that gives us a nice, I'm glad I asked that question because it gives us a nice jump off list of things to run through. Mm-hmm. I'm going to put the environment, not literally aside, but for purposes of this conversation, let's move that to back a tiny bit. I want to circle back to that because I'm curious about what your constituents ask you about specifically with regard mm-hmm. to that. But let's put that off to the side and not ignore the 500-pound gorilla in the room right now, which is that we are less than 60 days outside of the upcoming election. And you mentioned gerrymandering, and that's interesting, isn't it? You've been in the assembly for a good amount of time now, and I would bet that, you know, 20 years ago, constituents didn't ask as much about gerrymandering and appropriate representation in our democracy as they do now. And so maybe you could correct me if I'm wrong about that, but enlighten me as to what your constituents express as they're concerned about gerrymandering and what's the lay of the land for Dems? What's the practical reality for Dems in our state?
I think to understand where we are right now and how we got there, we have to go back. You know, when I was first elected 24 years ago, that was a time where we could actually work together. There were Republicans that you could actually go out and talk with, you could have dinner with, you could go have a drink with, and actually talk and come to agreements and actually get legislation passed that was really important.
Let's pause right there, Christine, if I may. You could do a bill with your colleagues from the other side of the aile.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It was great. Then over the years, we've seen it, you know, slowly evolve into what it is today. Like, first we had the Tea Party come in. You know, they were difficult to deal with, but not as bad as what we're dealing with right now. You know, Act 10 just really, really caused some really hard feelings between the sides. I think I am the only one left in the assembly that was actually there for Act 10 now. But it's still a big issue because of the way they went about just rolling us over on it. So what we've seen now is I don't even think they're Republicans. They're just extremists. And I, you know, we need to find a way to work together if we can't. If we cannot flip the Supreme Court in April, we're in big trouble. I think once we're able to at least pick up one seat on that Supreme Court, we can actually get something done on our side. We can get new maps. We can take another look at Act 10 and right to work and try to overturn some of that stuff. But so that's going to be the main thing.
That's the April 2023 Supreme Court that we have coming to fill the seat that will be vacated by Justice Rogensack.
Yes.
Let's move that again a little further down in the conversation. I want to stick with the fall of 2022.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. You're giving me a great list of topics. You and I are going to have no shortage of time. But in terms of gerrymandering, you know, one of your colleagues who no longer serves in the legislature, just to illustrate the point that you were making, it was a Democratic colleague of yours, person you know well. And since I'm quoting them, I won't name them without their permission. But they said to me, you know, when Governor Thompson, when Tommy was the governor, he'd walk down the aisle and pay as much attention to Dems at that time, and he would want you to like him, and he would want you to support his initiatives, and he would want to talk to you at least. And we didn't agree on things, but we did, you know, agree that we had stuff to talk about. That was basically what my friend, your former colleague in the assembly, told me. Is that right? And how is that different from a practical perspective when, for example, Governor Walker took over?
No, that is, I'd have to say that is absolutely right. Tommy Thompson is like the ultimate politician campaigner. He knows how to work both sides. And I think that became obvious, the fact that he is respected by both sides of the aisle. This past session, we did have a resolution honoring him, and members on both sides of the aisle actually got up and thanked him for what he did. I actually served with him when he was governor. This is a story I always like to tell. This man, I had only known him a few months at that time. He was in Cudahy for an event. I was running late. I got there late, and I was standing in the back of the room, and I had just dyed my hair. And he saw me standing way in the back of the room and pointed me out and said, I almost didn't recognize her because she dyed her hair. I mean, this is just the type of guy Tommy Thompson was. And then, you know, when he left, of course, we had Scott McCallum, who was kind of milquetoast. And then came Scott Walker, who just really, I mean, his whole attitude was divide and conquer. He didn't care who he got.
Heard a couple stories that if his team thought that they were in the 55-60% approval rating, they thought they were wasting their efforts because they really wanted to be right at that 50% marker, which meant, you know, half the state hated them, which to them meant they're doing their jobs. They're pushing the envelope as far as they can or as hard as they can on the Republican far right agenda.
Yeah.
Now, let me ask you this. We've got about 3 minutes till the break, and I want to ask you about how that changed from a gerrymander standpoint. What is the reality now in terms of after the 2010 changes for you as a caucus? And I mean, you Dems as a caucus, in terms of the votes you can win in the state versus the seats that you can win in the assembly and the Senate to a degree.
Yeah. Well, gosh, I don't know where to start on that one. As far as, you know, the seats that we think we can pick up, this is my own feeling on this is this election cycle is really different than other ones. Normally in the midterms, it's a given that the party in power, the Democrats this time around, do poorly, or, you know, don't do as well. But with everything that is going on, I do think we have an opportunity to pick up some seats. I think we have an opportunity to pick up the seat in the 84th. I think we have an opportunity to pick up the seat in the 21st. Those are the ones that I've been working on. I mean, there is some concern that on the northern part of the state, you know, way up North Superior, there's some concern up there because that's been trending a little more red, but we're working our butts off up there.
Where geographically are 84 and 21?
I'm sorry. Yeah. 21 is my neighboring district. It is South Milwaukee, Oak Creek, a little bit of Franklin. And the 84th is kind of a new district. They blew up a couple of districts out in the western suburbs of Milwaukee. But it is basically mainly, I believe, Greenfield and Greendale. That is the race that good old Bob Donovan is running in.
Right. Okay. Well, let me do this. We're on a less than a minute till our break. So I want to talk about those races because we want to talk about Milwaukee area elections that are close, that offer opportunities for Democrats and the candidates that are running in them. I know that you were involved in supporting and perhaps recruiting those candidates and see what our prospects are with those seats. With the reality of pickups are hard for Dems after the gerrymandered process of 2010. And then we'll come back looking further to the statewide races in the fall 2020 race. So thank you for staying put for the time being. I appreciate it. And we'll see you on the other side.
Okay, thank you.
Welcome back to the Paul Revere Show. This is Craig Mastantuono sitting in for Mark Thompson, regular host of the Paul Revere Show. And our guest this evening is Wisconsin State Representative Christine Sinicki, Democrat from the 20th Legislative District. Chris, thanks for joining us again. We left off talking about a couple of races in the fall election involving the Wisconsin Assembly that you see as competitive in the Milwaukee area and an opportunity potentially for Democrats to pick up seats. And those were 84th and 21st legislative districts. Maybe you could tell us about those candidates.
Okay, well, let's start with the 21st. In fact, I believe you've had that candidate on the show, Nate Jarowski.
Yes.
Yes, he is an attorney that practices labor law, I believe. He's a young guy with two young children, I believe, lives in South Milwaukee and is working his butt off. We just hosted a fundraiser for him last week, Senator Larson and I did. He had a great turnout. He's out there, I think, just about every day knocking doors and making phone calls and raising the money that needs to be raised. Because let's be realistic, these races are not cheap. But I do think he has got a really strong chance. And after I talk about Luann, I'll tell you why I think they both have strong chances this time around.
Sure.
Luann Bird is, she's an older woman, you know, grandmother. Her husband is a disabled veteran. She, another one who has been nonstop campaigning. Somehow she got the attention of Bill Penzi. And so he's actually helping her raise some funds for her campaign. She's running against Bob Donovan, who, as we all know, was a Milwaukee alderman, then ran for mayor of the city of Milwaukee. Luckily, he got beat. Yeah, he got trumped. I like cringe thinking I might have to work with him. but Luann is a really a top-notch candidate this time around. And the reason I feel that we do have a chance, like I said at the top of the show, things are different this election cycle. And I think what we're seeing, what I'm hearing from people who are out there on a daily basis, recruiting and registering people to vote, we have a lot of young college-aged women who are lining up to register to vote. And the reason I think we could be successful in these suburbs this time around is, so for years, you know, there's a lot of Republican women who are pro-choice, but it was something they never had to deal with because we all thought it was a protected, you know, it was protected in the Constitution. Well, that was blown up. So now, as I'm talking to some Republican women, they're like, yeah, I usually vote Republican, but, you know, I'm really worried about the Roe issue. You know, I'm really worried about the abortion issue. So I think that is our key to winning these races in the suburbs.
Yeah, I'm glad that's a perfect segue, Chris, because we wanted to move into the Dobbs decision and the overturning of Roe versus Wade. And you're talking about the races that you see as competitive in the local area and how the Dobbs decision overturning the Roe versus Wade honoring of a privacy-based right to abortion for women. The messaging. And so Prince controversy took us into this portion of the program. And that was certainly, to understate it, a controversial decision, was it not? And so on that, you're hearing from, you're seeing registrations go up. You're seeing registrations go up, particularly among young women. Republican women that you're talking to are saying, I voted for whatever reasons, whether it was lower taxes, whether I was voting with my spouse, whether it was we have a nice life in the suburbs and I don't have to worry about much, are now saying, you know, I'm rethinking that. And it's motivated, I would say, as an attorney, you know, rights can be taken for granted, but nothing pees you off like your rights being taken away. And so that seems to be a motivator in the public and in the electorate. So talk about that a little bit more and how you're working it into your messaging and how Dems are working it into their messaging.
Yeah. So first of all, let me say, when this leak came out, I think so many of us were in shock that there was a possibility that this was even really going to happen. And I remember sitting on my couch when the ruling actually came out. I was numb. I thought I was ready for it, but I wasn't. I was completely numb, and I must have sat there for a half hour just crying. And at that point, I said, this is my line in the sand. If you're not with me, get out of my way, because I'm going to roll right over you. And I think that's what we're seeing from a lot of people. And I think as Democrats, we could do a much better job messaging on this issue. It's sometimes, and you know, I don't want to talk badly against my party, but sometimes I think we are afraid to take on those tough, controversial issues. But what I'm hearing from people is they want us to fight.
Well, that's interesting. We're going to move into one more break, and I'm going to invite you to join us on the other side, Chris, if you can, because I want to get into that specific with you. I think that you bring up a very interesting point. I think that Republicans are running like the dog that caught the bus, mm-hmm. and they're making clear that they support exceptions for rape and incest, et cetera. And I don't hear the Democratic aggressive messaging calling it out for what it is, which is, frankly, opposition to abortion, privacy right, and a woman's right to choose. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about that on the other side.
Yep. I wish we all were nude. I wish there were no black and white. I wish there were no rules. People call me.
Show coming back at you. Craig Mastantuono sitting in for Mark Thompson, regular host. Welcome back. And we are continued to be lucky and joined by Wisconsin State Representative Christine Sinicki, 20th District, Wisconsin Assembly. Chris, welcome back. When we were heading into the last break, we were just touching on the Dobbs decision, overturning Roe versus Wade and a woman's right to privacy, affording them the right to choose an abortion, which was the law of the land essentially for nearly 50 years. It's incredible to say because it didn't seem that long, but it really was. And now we have a precedent we have a decision in Dobbs that completely overturns that precedent and tosses it back to the states. We were chatting about Wisconsin legislative races and Democrats in general in elective politics and the messaging around this. I mentioned that the messaging on the other side seems to be a little bit of a pullback from particularly like United States Senate candidates who are saying, well, you know, I support exceptions to this now what could be total ban in many states, including our own. And what's the Democratic messaging moving forward now in light of these developments and women's renewed interest in electoral politics, perhaps?
Okay, first let me address the Republicans and the fact that they seem to be like, whoa, you know, pulling back. You know, the music that was playing, the Who, Don't Get Fooled Again, it was perfect because that's exactly what the Republicans are trying to do. You know, all of a sudden you got Ron Johnson, you know, oh yeah, I'm going to support, you know, the exceptions. Of course I am. Well, no, they're not going to. Each and every one of them, once that election is held on November 9th, they're going to forget what they said because their ultimate goal is to ban abortion 100%, ban birth control. I mean, they've made no secrets. Do not be fooled by them.
Let me stop you right there, Christine, because what I would say, too, is let's walk that through. Okay, so you're for a total ban on abortion procedures minus exceptions for incest and rape. What does that make you? Incredibly extremist is what Democrats should be calling these people out on and not giving them a pass for offering support for exceptions that, quite frankly, only make empathetic, rational, and Christian common sense, if you ask me. That's the starting point, not the ending point. And I think, and I suspect you do from your earlier comments, that we're missing an opportunity if we don't call them out on that every single time they say it.
We absolutely are. And I honestly don't know why we are not making a bigger deal of it. Why are we not shouting this from the rooftops? You know, I was talking to my husband just before we started the show, and there was a Michael's commercial on TV. And I said to him, I said, well, you know, maybe, or he said, well, does this mean that the mother has to have the baby? I said, yeah. I said, the mother has to give birth, and then after the baby's born, they don't give a damn. I said, but maybe what we should do is make Tim Michaels take care of all the unwanted babies in his mansion in Connecticut. I don't know.
Well, you know, I mean, I've heard a lot of people say that if men could get pregnant, abortion would be available.
Exactly. But we should be, we need to be loud and we need to be strong on this. Let's go back to last time we had the majority back in 2008. You know why we lost the majority? Well, plus, you know, redistricting. But we were not gutsy. We had a caucus that was afraid to do gutsy things. We couldn't do minimum wage increase because we had members that were afraid to do it. There was a whole slew of stuff we should have done, and we didn't. People want us to fight, and we have to fight on this. We need to use it in our messaging. We need to use it every chance we get because this is what resonates, and people need to understand that the Republicans are only going to tell you what you want to hear. They're not going to tell you. Yeah.
I had a young person tell me, which to me is, you know, younger than me, which means a lot of people, but a particularly young person said to me, you know, I don't like that the Dobbs decision threw this back to the states, because now every election is going to be about this. And this person, who was pro-choice, made the point of, I don't want all of the elections to be about this. Sometimes I want elections to be about things like minimum wage, infrastructure, mm-hmm. criminal justice policy, whatever it is. And now this is going to clutter. This fight is going to clutter every single race. And I think you're right. In fact, I know you're right. So the goal is not this simple, oh, let the states decide. The pro-life movement, the anti-choice movement, will move from winning the victory in Dobbs to now organizing in an effort to undermine and outlaw the right to choose in every single state. And I think this quaint assessment, well, if Kansas, well, Kansas is a great example, we'll come back to that, but if Arkansas wants to go this way, but abortions are legal in Illinois, that's just federalism, if you will, and states' rights. And no, they're not going to stop there. These people are not going to stop with Illinois has a constitutional right to abortion. They will work to overturn that. Do you think I'm wrong about that? Or
no, I do not think you're wrong at all. This has been something they have been working towards for 30 years. And they finally got their foot in the door, and they're not going to stop. They are not going to stop.
You mentioned 2008. Yeah. You mentioned 2008. And was there an opportunity to overturn the 1800s bill outlawing abortion in Wisconsin, and what happened?
Yeah, there was. I don't remember exactly because that was quite a while ago.
Of course.
But, you know, there was a bill. And again, we had a very different caucus than members. We had pro-life members in the Democratic caucus, and we had a very thin majority. So we could not have gotten the votes to do it, which is unfortunate. There's a lot of stuff we should have been doing that year, but we just couldn't get it done. And every session since then, there has been a bill introduced to repeal our criminal abortion ban. And, you know, it just, of course, they're not going to even hold a hearing on it, because this is this is their goal. This is what they have been working for. We missed so many opportunities on it. And I will admit, we screwed up.
Well, I think that your warning for Democrats, if you will, is to not avoid the word abortion, to not avoid talking about how your rights have been taken away from you, and to talk about how, frankly, we're moving backwards, not forwards. Mm-hmm. And I think people want to hear that message. I tend to agree with you that we shouldn't nibble around the margins of, you know, a right with exceptions for incest and rape. I mean, if that's the buffet we're at to get something to eat as Democrats, we're in the wrong restaurant. Okay, that's not where we should be. And I think you're right about Democrats needing to take the opportunity that has been given to them in what should be an off election cycle for Democrats and run with it hard and say we are moving in the wrong direction. That should be a message that will resonate with people. And, you know, do you talk with your colleagues about this? And do you coordinate messaging to, I know everybody's in their own race and everybody's in their own district and everybody's in their own Senate district. But how much do we talk about this together?
Not a whole lot, I'll tell you.
Yeah, I appreciate the honesty.
Yeah, I mean, because like you said, we're all in our own races. And when you're in Milwaukee, you're kind of on your own, honestly, because everything's in Milwaukee, everything's fine. So we don't, we don't really spend a whole lot of time having discussions with our colleagues in other parts of the state when it comes to this type of stuff during election time. We will have a discussion, I'm sure, when we get ready to go back into session. But you're right. This is something we should be talking about right now. Right now. One of the things I like to say when I speak at rallies or wherever I'm at is I want you to think about in 1849, who was in the legislature? Rich white landowners. Nobody looked like me or even you, Craig, in the legislature. And we're in a completely different world now, but they want to take us back to 1849. They want to take us back to a time when women couldn't vote, women couldn't have their own bank accounts, women had to take the man's name if they got married. I mean, no, I am not going back without a fight. I am not going back.
I think we lose sometimes perspective with age too. I think that we don't have a frank discussion about Roe and the fact that Roe at the time, first of all, was decided by a majority Republican Supreme Court. I mean, these were justices that were appointed by Republican presidents and was a majority Republican court. And that just illustrates how far to the right the extreme Republican, party has moved, the radical Republican, as I like to say. And secondly, how Roe is what, according to kind of generic polling, right, people say they want, which is compromise in the middle. Roe was a compromise decision. Roe said that there's a limited authority for states to step in and regulate abortion. And Roe also honored a constitutional individual privilege to privacy and the pragmatic solution of viability and trimester-based system for when states could exercise their authority to regulate abortion was essentially a pragmatic solution based in science at the time and was a compromise. And so, I think we forget, first of all, that 25-year-old people don't necessarily, having not lived through that history, appreciate that fully. But I think that we need to talk about that and how essentially the extreme radical right has ripped a pragmatic legal compromise out and instead, tossed this back to democratic processes and in that took away a constitutional privilege for women.
Yeah. And that's what we need to have that discussion and we need to talk about it publicly with people.
All the time.
Now. Yeah.
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to find out, aren't we, how that resonates in the fall.
Yes.
And whether that moves people to the polls and, to the blue side of things in our state. If there's an opportunity to claw back a couple of seats for your caucus, I know that you will have considered a job well done. And, can you just talk to our public a little bit about the danger that, and I don't, I don't think we're headed here, but that danger that we run on the Democratic side into falling into a veto-proof majority for the Republicans if we don't hold service and then some on the blue side of things.
Yeah, that is one of my biggest concerns. Besides being a state legislator, I also chair the Democratic Party of Milwaukee County. So I've kind of got my fingers in all of these races, the statewide races, the governor's race, the U.S. Senate race, the AG's race. If we lose seats again in the assembly, I don't even know how to say it nicely. We're screwed. A lot of people are saying that the Senate is probably going to lose seats. I hate to say it. and that the focus has to be on the assembly. And I believe they are probably right. We need to focus on making sure that we are not giving them a supermajority. Because if they get a supermajority, the governor doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah.
We're just screwed.
Chris, will you join us for one more segment on the other side?
Sure.
Okay, let's talk about how we prevent that and how we don't get fooled again.
Okay.
Tuno sitting in for regular host Mark Thompson, and we are joined once again by Wisconsin State Assembly Representative Christine Sinicki from Wisconsin 20th District. Chris, thanks for coming back on this side for our run to the end of the hour here. You know, we've been talking really about elective politics heading into the fall 2022 election and themes on the Democratic side, the Dobbs decision, women's right to choose. Let's talk about the other side for a bit as we introed in with CCR, Fortunate Son. You know, as a criminal lawyer, criminal justice attorney who defends people accused of crime, I've often noticed around election time that the other side talks about crime and wishes for money. And you know what I mean by that?
Oh, yeah.
What they want to do is scare the heck out of everybody about crime being, no matter what year, no matter what happened, crime is out of control and people should be scared to go outside their home and scared of Democrats who are trying to basically assault them with crime. And, you know, what they're really thinking is, look, the eye on the prize is for us to get richer, to have our businesses not be regulated, to have our environment, as you said, your constituents are starting to express concern about the environment, to have our environment be harmed, to have our taxes cut to nearly nothing, to have government reduced to an ineffective bureaucracy that no longer exists because it can't do anything to improve people's lives. And let us all just be on our own and the rich get richer, like Fogarty was telling us about, and the poor get poorer. That's my view, but I'd like to hear yours, especially as, you know, the chair of the Milwaukee Democratic Party, because really, they take aim at Milwaukee, don't they, when they deliver that message statewide?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, they've always been very anti-Milwaukee. Any chance they get, they like to use Milwaukee and basically put us out there and let people believe that we are this horrible, crime-ridden, dirty, scummy city, you know, with city leadership that doesn't care. You know, you see these commercials that they're running.
They're horrible.
They're horrible. Absolutely horrible. And let's think about, you know, they talk about defunding the police. First of all, as a Democrat, I've never talked about defunding the police. I don't know really any true Democrat that has talked about defunding the police. What I have seen, though, is the Republicans basically defunding not only the police, but all of our emergency services, all of our city services, as they continue to cut down on our shared revenue.
Wow, you just hit the nail on the head, didn't you? I mean, Milwaukee's police department has been defunded by Republicans for the last 20 years who have reduced systemically shared revenue for this city, which forced Mayor Barrett and the Common Council over the years to make tough choices between public safety and city services or raising the property tax levy, which is the only revenue raising device the city has to survive on, especially when shared revenue gets cut. So who's defunding the police?
The Republicans. The Republicans can every budget cycle.
Well, you and I just did that in 45 seconds. Why aren't we out there with that, with our message?
Exactly. That is another message that we are losing it on. you know, the other issue when you talk about crime and how they're using this issue against Milwaukee is when they talk about the Milwaukee DA. Now, I will, you know, disclaimer, John Chisholm is a friend of mine.
Of mine too.
Yes. But I will tell you right now, I mean, the reason why we're seeing these guys, these criminals coming out who should not be out of jail is because over and over again, they have asked the county, the district attorney's office, everybody involved in law enforcement has told us we need to pay our assistant DAs better. We need more. We need more DAs, and we don't have enough attorneys that will take out. What do you call them? Like free cases, you know. Public defenders. Thank you.
I was one for 7 years, Chris.
I was drawing a blank, but we are constantly being asked and told this is what we need, and the Republicans have constantly said no.
So what you're talking about essentially, well, first of all, any notion that District Attorney John Chisholm wants to let criminals out on the streets and wants to be soft on crime is, to anyone who knows him or works in the system, the criminal justice system, which I do for my vocation every day when I'm not spending free time talking with you, right? That notion is ludicrous. John Chisholm is a law and order district attorney who has endeavored to make our city safer every day on the job. And as a criminal defense lawyer who goes to battle with his office on a weekly basis, saying that means a lot coming from me. And, you know, you're right about, you know, kind of a systemic defunding of our criminal justice system overall. Look, the fact of the matter is when the public and even our elected officials who don't work in the criminal justice system take notice of the justice system, it's when something bad happens. And that really shouldn't be the only time we pay attention to the hardworking prosecutors, defenders, and judges in the justice system that produce success stories every day. I mean, we never talk, and I won't talk now, about people that get put on probation, make it through probation, and move forward to a better chapter of their lives and become productive members of society. Somehow that just doesn't make the paper, and we don't talk about it on the news or on the radio, but those success stories outnumber the people that do terrible things while either they're released on bond or recidivate after serving their sentences by a large margin. And, you know, we just don't want to talk about that until something bad happens. And then we look around for someone to blame. But I think until we as Democrats have a more intelligent conversation about public safety overall, you know, we're going to fall into this trap every year. And they can, you know, from Willie Horton to today, they can keep slinging that same old pass down the sideline and hope that it connects with the electorate, which is be afraid. There's a latent racism in that message. And frankly, it's disingenuous because they're not even chasing public safety on their side. They're chasing lower taxes and business deregulation.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
You know, Chris, I think when Democrats like you come on and talk about community, talk about our lives, and I'll let you wrap it up with the final 10 seconds or so, and what we can do to be productive and what government can do to help us, we're on a winning platform. What do you think?
Oh, I agree. And I just thought, first of all, thank you for having me, and I'll come back anytime. Secondly, you know, I know we say this all the time, but this really is the most important election of our lifetime. There's a lot at stake.
Great closeout. Wisconsin State Representative Christine Sinicki, Wisconsin's 20th District. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Mark Thompson will be back in a couple of weeks. Craig Mastantuono in his stead in the meantime. Thank you.